Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
It's Friday, the 6th of September. Good morning. I'm Dino Zoccolo from Westbrook Alternative Asset Management, standing in for Simon Brown, who's enjoying a much-deserved holiday. Don't worry, he'll be back with you on Monday morning. And I'm coming to you live from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. First up this morning, the Finance Ghost gives us an update on the JSE retail sector's latest developments and performance. Thereafter, Anchor Capital's CEO, Peter Armitage, unpacks alternative assets and why they have become one of the world's fastest-growing investment classes. And finally, Sanan Pillay from the Sanlam Investments multi-manager discusses how to incorporate alternative assets into a well-diversified investment portfolio. But before we get there, let's start with this morning's headlines. First on MoneyWeb, expedite audits of driving license card procurement process, Creasy tells the AG, and widen the scope, says the minister, after receiving new evidence from OUTA of alleged serious irregularities in the decision to make Ademia the preferred bidder. In Business Day, business laments government's lack of interest in NHI talks. Raising concerns is a responsible action, says Busa, after the health minister resorts to apartheid gevaar. In your morning markets, the US markets are mostly red, with the S&P down 0.3% and the NASDAQ flat. In the East, it's also mostly red, although Sydney is up 0.46%, Tokyo is 1.05% in the red, and Hong Kong is down 0.14%. Commodities are mostly green, gold and Brent are flat, but platinum is up 0.74%, and palladium is up a large amount, 5.7%. The Rand dollar is at 1770, Bitcoin is at 56,744, and lastly, the JSE Top 40 opening call this morning is expected 190 points up, or 0.25%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Welcome this morning to our first guest, the Finance Ghost. Ghost, I know you've been talking on Twitter that it's been an early morning for you. Thank you for the time. We're going to talk this morning about the JSE retail sector, and I think probably the best place to start is with the clothing market. I'd like to unpack some of the competitive forces coming through in the latest results. Let's talk maybe TFG, Truworths, and Mr. Price.
Thanks, Dino. So great to be invited to do this with you. Early morning aside, I am quite a night owl, unfortunately, but let's jump straight into it. So, yeah, those are good names to talk to. And look, Truworths, I think, has been the value stock in the sector for quite some time now. And that's really just a nice way of saying that they've been the relative underperformer when it comes to valuation multiples. So, of course, in this GNU environment, when everything goes up, typically the company that was at the lowest multiples gets the nicest boost. However, you've got to look at the underlying earnings, and headline earnings per share for the 52 weeks to the end of June, that fell by between 5 and 9% for Truworths. And in Truworths Africa, which includes South Africa, that's definitely a concern. You know, sales down 6.9% for the second half of the year versus 0.3% in the first half. So, you know, that's not good at all. There's no good momentum there. If we move across to the Fashini Group, sales were down 3.5% for the 21 weeks to the 24th of August. So they gave a bit of a trading update recently. TFG Africa, that includes SA as well, that was down 1%. Not so bad, but still down. Interestingly enough, over there, gross margin expanded. That seems to be the saving grace. That's where they've been focusing. Happy to give up market share. They just want to make their margins. Mr. Price, they managed only comparable store sales of 0.1% for the quarter to June. June itself was better than April and May, but again, that's just 1 month's worth of data point. So it comes to, you know, where is all the growth gone? Like, where is this GNU story playing out? And yes, consumer spending will help. They all talked to the late onset of winter as one of the factors as well. Although I think in that Fashini Group number, we can see winter and it's still not looking great. I think the biggest risk factor is probably just the level of competition, and especially online from China. Yes, people are talking about it, but I'm not sure they're actually talking about it enough. You know, it's not that people are not still buying from local retailers, it's that they are buying a big chunk elsewhere as well. Despite all of this, though, share prices up pretty well year to date. Mr. Price 50%, Fashini and Truworths roughly 28% each. But in the past week, they have all corrected between minus 4% and minus 6%. So a rally like that is vulnerable, and people would do well to just keep that in mind, I think. Mm.
And guys, you raise an interesting point about Chinese competition. I mean, if you drive along the road in South Africa, you'll see a Chinese car on every corner. There's a Haval on every corner. What do you think this means for the JSE-listed automotive sector, not just in the clothing market?
Yeah, there literally is a Haval on every corner. I mean, they've been building SUVs in China for over 20 years now, and it's all a big joke to the European brands, right? Until it's not. By 2014, I went and had a look. Haval had competed in the Dakar Rally for the fifth time by then, and they got a stage win. Now, that might sound like my motorsport interest coming through, and it's a bit niche, but just think about how Toyota advertised the Hilux, for example, with Jeanine de Villiers, and how important that's all been. Perfect hindsight tells us we should have paid attention. Haval's been in South Africa since 2017, so it's 7 years already. And at the moment, they are absolutely killing it, right? They are everywhere. I looked in my complex the other day. I think the cars here are Chinese. And if you read the global results at the likes of Stellantis, you'll see that the China threat is immense. It's driving this tariff war between West and East. I'm going to look at this in a lot more detail on Supernatural Stocks, which is on MoneyWeb as well this week. But one of the things that I'll mention here to scare you a bit is in the CMH Integrated Annual Report for 2024, over half of the vehicles sold in South Africa are manufactured in either India or China. So yes, CMH will get a little bit of that trend. You know, they've been appointed as distributor for a brand like Foton. They, you know, will get some other brands from Chinese manufacturers. But CMH is sitting with 43 dealerships across 28 brands. How many of those brands do you really want to be exposed to now? They have more Volvo dealerships than Haval dealerships. And I'm not sure that's the way I would want to own a business right now. At Motus, they did very well out of having the Korean brands Hyundai and Kia. For a long time, those were the darlings of the market, right? I mean, those were the first real disruptors, I think, that we've seen. And again, it just feels like I'm seeing more Chinese cars on the road right now than Korean. So disruption is super dangerous. It's especially dangerous when you have a footprint of fixed assets like car dealerships. And I think it's happening under our noses in the automotive sector, and you'd never say it by looking at those share prices. CMH and Motus have both had an incredible year, and I think they are vulnerable. They are different businesses. Motus has a lot more offshore stuff, and I want to unpack that as well on Supernatural Stocks. As for CMH, very SA-focused and lots of different brands, and I'm not sure the right ones.
Ghost, thank you very much. I appreciate the early morning and looking forward to taking a look at Supernatural Stocks. That was the Finance Ghost talking about the JSE retail sector.
Attention, all investors and finance enthusiasts. Get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me, Jeremy Maggs, on Tuesday, the 10th of September at the Sandton Convention Centre as we connect with over 100 top chief executives and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all in one incredible day. Secure your spot now. Register online at www.moneysummit.co.za for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. This is your chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Don't miss it.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Our next guest this morning is Peter Armitage. He's the CEO of Anchor Capital. And as I mentioned earlier this morning, we're going to be theming the podcast today, unpacking alternatives and talking a little bit more around the rise of alternative assets. Peter, thank you. I appreciate the early morning. Maybe to begin, if you are anywhere around South Africa at the moment, you'll see billboards and you'll have read a lot around alternative assets. There's a lot of talk, but I'm not entirely sure everybody who's listening to the podcast this morning knows exactly what they are. Maybe let's begin at the beginning. What exactly, Peter, is an alternative investment and how do they differ from the traditional markets?
Do you know the way that we typically view alternative assets is anything kind of different to the vanilla equities and bonds that most people are invested in? So equities and bonds can change price on a daily basis. You know, markets can go up 10 or 20%. Alternative assets tend to be characteristics like a little bit of longer duration. They don't price every day. So it can be a hedge fund. It can be a property. And for instance, you can have a company that sits as a listed business that's considered traditional. If they delisted and sat in a private equity fund, that would be considered alternative. So it's usually... there's lots of different ways to think about it. It's usually creating more stable investments. It's usually creating investments that you locked in for a little bit longer because they can do something. You know, the Normal assets, you would have to go and put a buy and a sell on the board to get out of your asset. An alternative asset often has a time period where, you know, a property deal or a private debt fund where, you know, there's a time period where they'd give you your money back. Okay. We've been focusing on it because, you know, that provides very nice return profiles.
I was about to go to that question, Peter, you know, which is obviously there's pros and cons, but why do you think they've grown so much in popularity recently?
I think a lot of it is because interest rates are higher, so you can create products and investments which earn a really nice return. And I think investors, by and large, over the course of the last 5 years have been exhausted by equity markets. So you've got a pretty poor return in global markets over 5 years with enormous volatility. And if we can create a fund or an investment which gives you, you know, in South Africa, a stable 1% per month, or offshore, it's stable 0.8% per month, you know, kind of compounding at a nice steady pace, that's very attractive to investors. And that's the sweet spot in the alternative investment space.
They're obviously not that popular, not that large when you compare them, Peter, to the traditional markets. Talk to me a little bit around perhaps why that is the case. You know, what are the risks and the potential downsides when looking at alternative assets?
Well, I think firstly, lack of knowledge. So I think people are comfortable with equities. Ironically, you know, equities are a lot more risky. It's very easy for an equity fund to go, you know, down 10 or 20% before having a kick up. Secondly, you know, often you do have to lock your money in for a bit of a time period. So, you know, our kind of favorite alternative space is private debt. So it's private companies doing stuff in the space of banks, where banks don't want to participate because they're shorter term loans or, you know, banks with various balance sheet restrictions. But you can picture a private debt fund has to lend money out for a time period. So they can't let you put your money in and take it out 2 weeks later. So, you know, the Westbrook Fund, as you know, sits with 6 months liquidity. So people just, you know, as a starting point, they prefer liquidity. But then, you know, lastly, it's just, you know, so we've created some funds which give people access to things which otherwise that'd be the ticket price is too big. So a private equity fund where, you know, you'd want $1 million from an investor. In our fund, we've got a number of those investments. You can have exposure to a number of them. So it's, and unless somebody's created a nice, easy vehicle for you to invest in, it's not something that the man in the street has exposure to. But certainly in SA, you know, we're following what happens around the world. And there's various funds coming up which give people the ability to invest in alternative assets.
I was actually going to ask you the question, how does one overcome this issue with a lack of knowledge and understanding of the asset class? But certainly accessing through a fund makes a lot of sense. You spoke about the global players, Peter. Talk us through a little bit around who the major players are in the ecosystem and the types of asset managers that an anchor capital is looking at allocating capital to.
Yeah, so there's the alternative space tends to be kind of niche players. There are the big players, the Blackstones, the Black Rocks overseas. The big ones tend to be quite property focused because that's where the biggest and most kind of secure asset class is. What we do at Anchor Capital is we tend to try and invest with people that we know. I think in the alternative asset class, you've got to be very confident in the competence and depth of the investment committees and management teams of businesses that you invest with. You know, so we've got a fair bit of money with Westbrook, who are specialists in the property space, as you will know. Well, in the private lending space, which tends to be kind of property based, and got some private equity funds. And then there's you know, there's typically some big deals that float around South Africa. We've invested in a US fiber deal with the guys who started Vumatel. We've invested in UK data centers. We guys put together funds around specific assets, which, you know, we like the guys who put it together. There's a company called Argo in the UK who specialize in property investments. So if we find a nice deal, we'll invest there. And what we try and do is create a diversified portfolio of assets, which have got a profile of, you know, kind of aiming for that 10 to 15% in SA, 9 to 12% offshore. And if markets crash, you shouldn't see the price go down. And I think that's really the comfort. A lot of the time, the return is earned from a coupon. So every month or 3 months, you're getting interest on your investment. You're not relying on somebody else deciding that the asset is worth more.
Absolutely. That's Peter Armitage. Thank you very much, Peter, for your early morning talking to us a little bit more around the rise and unpacking exactly what is an alternative asset.
Attention, all investors and finance enthusiasts. Get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me, Jeremy Maggs, on Tuesday, the 10th of September at the Sandton Convention Center as we connect with over 100 top chief executives and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all in one incredible day. Secure your spot now. Register online at www.moneysummit.co.za for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. This is your chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Don't miss it.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
So keeping with the theme of alternative assets and investing into alternatives, and we're now speaking to Sanan Pillay. Sanan is a portfolio manager at the Sanlam Investments multi-manager. Sanan, good morning. I appreciate your early morning. I think let's start where Peter Armitage from Anchor Capital left off. He explained a little bit to us around alternative assets and exactly what they are, some of the pros and some of the cons. Sanan, you're obviously an expert along with the team at Sanlam around allocating and investing into different things around the world. Has the Sanlam multi-manager incorporated alternatives into your investment portfolios? And if so, to what extent?
Hi, Dino, and thank you for having me. Yes, we have. We use alternatives across our range of portfolios. Our exact allocations range from a few percent up to 20% in some of our more unconstrained offerings, and we invest in quite a broad range of different alternative strategies.
That's quite a substantial amount, actually, up to 20%. Why the decision, Sanan, to deviate from the tried and tested? What do you see to be some of the key benefits of incorporating alternatives into your portfolios?
So we see the benefits of adding alternatives to your box of tools as being that they can dramatically expand the range of client problems that you are able to solve. Because of the unique characteristics and properties of alternatives, they give you something that's really different. And this allows us to address our client needs in a much more nuanced fashion. Some of the key benefits of alternatives are that they are usually uncorrelated to the general tried and tested public market investments. And that really helps if you are trying to build a diversified portfolio. They also generate their returns in a different manner to more traditional investments, which means that they are often able to continue generating strong returns, even when those traditional asset classes might be faltering.
I got you. And there's a very large ecosystem, Sanan, of alternative assets out there. We spoke earlier about private debt. It goes all the way from private debt to hybrid capital, private equity, and then you've got some of the more niche alternatives, things like classic car collections, Bitcoin, etc. Talk to me a little bit around which your favorite alternative asset classes are at the moment and why that is the case.
So we haven't really gone much into Bitcoin in our business, but over the last few years, we've really liked the private credit space. The stricter banking regulations after the global financial crisis pushed a lot of lending activity out of the banking system and into the private credit industry. So that space has had some strong tailwinds over the last decade. On a forward-looking basis, locally, we think that the private equity space could be a big beneficiary if the government's economic reform program results in better growth in our country.
A lot of conversation at the moment around private credit. It will be interesting to see, I suppose, what happens around the popularity of the private credit asset class as interest rates are to come down. Another question for you, Sanan, is obviously accessing alternative investments is a challenge for the man on the street, for your average investor. Do you see there to be a benefit? And if so, what is the benefit of accessing alternatives via a multi-manager as opposed to directly?
So there are many idiosyncrasies to investing in the alternative space. Lots of jargon that you need to know, lots of technicalities that you might not find in traditional investment. And over and above that, the gap between the best and the worst alternative asset managers from a performance and risk perspective can be very large. For these reasons, we think it's useful to have an investment partner alongside you that can help you to navigate the space, avoid the major potholes, and select the investments that are suited to what your specific financial goals are.
And one last question, Sanan, for you, which is, you know, I think it's probably fair to say that alternatives in South Africa are a lot less popular and prevalent than places like North America and the European Union. Why do you think that is?
So as I mentioned earlier, just because of those idiosyncrasies and the lots of technicalities and jargon that you find in the alternative space, there is a learning curve that needs to happen for investors to really feel comfortable with investing in alternatives. That learning curve happened, you know, perhaps two or three decades ago in the North America, in the European Union, but it's only been happening more recently in South Africa. But we have definitely seen a step change in the amount of interest in alternatives locally. And that's been helped by the recent changes to Regulation 28. We do expect interest in the space to continue to grow quite rapidly due to a more supportive government and also due to the efforts of the local alternatives community to educate investors about the space.
Well, it's great to see businesses like the Sanlam Investments multi-manager assisting investors on that journey. That's Sanan Pile. He's a portfolio manager at the Sanlam Investments multi-manager. That's it for today. MoneyWeb Now is live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. and podcast just after 7 a.m. Thank you for listening. Thank you to my guests for your time. And thank you very much to Eddie and Nobutle from the MoneyWeb team for handholding me as Simon's stand-in this morning. I've had a lot of fun. For those of you who haven't met me, my name is Dino Zoccolo from Westbrook Alternative Asset Management. And this was MoneyWeb Now.
This show was brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.